Okay, so we are holding on Nun Zion Omud Bay, about three quarters of the way down the Omud, line begins Zahav. We learned in the Mishnah, forgot to move this together, okay. So we're holding on Nun Zion Omud Bay, about three quarters of the way down the Omud, line begins Zahav. We started learning in the Mishnah about various kinds of accessories and jewelry and whatnot that women are not allowed to wear on Shabbos Midrabanan, because he said either they might be saying we discussed things that she might have to take off in order to tovel, and then she might carry them. And then we started talking about other ones where she might take them off in order to show them off to her friends, and then she'll carry them, or you have other ones that they might fall off, and she'll carry them. So continuing on that topic, the Mishnah had said, Veloy b'kovel, that a woman is not allowed to wear a kovel to the Rosh Hashanah. Now, we said a kovel was an exception to the rule. She is allowed to wear it in places where she is allowed to wear it in the chatzir. And we discussed yesterday what the possibilities of that are. Does it mean that the other ones she's not even allowed to wear in the house? Does it mean the other ones she's not allowed to wear in a chatzir that doesn't have an eruv, but she is allowed to wear them in a chatzir that has an eruv? Or is it that even in a chatzir with an eruv, the other one she's not allowed to, and only this kovel yet? So we have to figure out what the kovel is. Amar Rav Yanai, kovel ze eni yodea mahu. So Rav Yanai says, I don't know what the kovel is. The problem is that there were two possible things in those times that were called kovel. E kavla de avdetchnan. The first possibility is it means the kovel that slaves wear, which is that a slave or maid servant in this case, because we're talking about women, would wear a kind of wear a stamp or badge or something so that everybody knows that he's an Eved. So the Mishnah would be saying that a shivcha is not allowed to wear it on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah, but she'd be allowed to wear it in the chaser of avo kipashol tzemer. But in that case, the other possible meaning of kovel is a wool cap that a woman wears under her snood. So in that case, shafer dummy, then it would be allowed, because then we would say that, just like we said in the Mishnah, that if she has things that are sewn onto her hat and she's a married woman who has to keep her hair covered, then she's not going to take off her hat in order to show them off, because then she'd be uncovering her hair. So by that logic, we would say that she's allowed to wear the kippah shel tzemer, because same thing, it goes under her snood or her hat or whatever, so it's not the kind of thing that she's going to take off and show off in public. So therefore, then the kovel would mean the first one, the kind of badge or whatever that an eved or a shivcha wears. So is that the case? Or maybe actually the Mishnah means this woolen cap that she's not allowed to go out with to the shofarabim. And the reason is because, again, she might take it off. It's under the hat. It is, but it's not. It's made in such a way that part of it sticks. That it is possible to pull it out from under the hat without uncovering her hair. And therefore, then in order to put it back on, then she'd need to uncover her hair. So then she might not put it back on, and then she might carry it in Rosh Hashanah. So in that case, v'choshken kavla d'avda. And then how much more so that the one that's worn by the eved would be usher. Why would it be a kosher can? The one thing is because the badge is easier to take on and off. But another reason would be because the word kovel more often meant the woolen cap. So therefore, we would say that if it means that, then how much more so it means the less common or the other way around. Actually, the Sfasemna says that the more common meaning of kovel is the thing that the eved wears, which is why Rav Yanai thought that as his first possibility, that maybe that's what that means. So if the Mishnah means even that more common use of the word kovel and saying that's not allowed, then how much more so the less common meaning if the Tana therefore is using the less common word kovel to mean that, if he's using it in the less common sense to mean this woolen cap, then how much more so he would be saying that it means the more common use of the word kovel, which is this badge that the Eved wears. So that's the question. So the Gemara says, Omer of Abahu, Mistab, the commander, Omer Kippur Shal Semer, Tnan. It's logical to say, according to the opinion, that it means the Kippur Shal Semer, that it means the woolen, that it means the woolen cap, because, for one thing, we can assume that we can assume that the missionary is talking about something that's more commonly worn, and a woman wears this cap much more often than many more women wear this cap than they wear the badge. So Tosfos points out, if we're going to say that it's a woolen cap, then we understand. We said yesterday, and the Gemara is going to mention later on the Perek, that the Chachamim didn't want to prevent her from wearing all of her ornaments and whatnot, because they didn't want to make her completely unattractive to her husband. So therefore, we would say they allowed her to wear the kovel and the chatzar, fine. But if you're going to say that it means the slave's badge, then why would they give a heter to wear it in the chatzar? So Tosfos says, because if he goes the whole day without it, then the master is going to be on edge. He's going to be kind of on edge, feeling that this slave is already starting. You know, he doesn't even have on him his badge that shows that he's an eved. So any little thing he does that the master doesn't like, he's going to start thinking that the slave is going to rebel against him and is going to cause an argument. So therefore, according to that, the chachamim would allow him to wear it in the chatzah. Another point that the Rashba and other Rishonim make is that almost the opposite, that the Eved would gladly take it off, the Eved would gladly take the thing off whenever possible. So therefore, so when it comes to regular kinds of things, you don't want to wear them. You don't want to wear them in a Shusar Adim because you're going to end up carrying them, and therefore you can't wear them in the Chatzar either, so you don't walk out with them to the Shusar Adim. But the Eved would gladly, if he has a chance to go out from the Chatzar to the Shusar Adim, he would gladly take it off, and therefore the Chacham didn't feel it necessary, according to that way of looking at it, to prevent him from wearing it in the Chatzar. Okay. Anyway, so Rav Boho was saying that it's more logical that to say that it means the Kippur Shal Semer. The Tanya Nami Hochi, and in fact we learn like that in the Braisa, Yot the Isha B'Kobol over Istama L'Chatzar, a woman is allowed to go out to the Chatzar wearing a kovel or wearing an istama, which we're going to define soon. What an istama is. So she's allowed to go with that into the chatzar. Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, af the kovel lo shusar adim. Reb Shimon Elazar says no, she's actually even allowed to wear the kovel into the shusar adim. Klal Omer Reb Shimon Elazar. In fact, Reb Shimon Elazar says a general rule: kol shu lamatim es tzvacha yotzim bo. Anything that goes below the hairnet or the hat or whatever, for example, the kippah shel tzemer, which goes, she puts that on her head first, then she puts the svacha, the hair, the tichel or the hat or whatever on top of that. So Shimon Elazar says, anything that's that, yotzimbo, you're allowed to go with it on Shabbos, because again, she's not going to take off her hat or her tichel to show it off to her friends. And now it is possible, like we said before, it is possible to pull it out from the side and not uncover her hair, but Shimon Elazar figures that that's a big tircha, and she's not going to bother in doing that. So therefore, but kosher lemailam and esvacha and yotzimboy, but anything that goes above her hat, then she wouldn't be allowed to wear on Shabbos. So therefore, we see from that braisa that the kovel is something that goes under her hat or under her tichel, which would be therefore this kippah shel tzemer. It wouldn't be the eved badge, because the eved or the shifcha's badge goes either around their neck or on their clothing or whatever, as we're going to discuss later. Okay. So that answers that. That's what the kovel means. Although we're going to see soon, the Gemara is going to bring a different opinion on that subject. So the Gemara asks, okay, so we said in the Braisa that she's allowed to wear a kovel or an istma into a chaser. My istma. Amar Rav Abahu bizyoni. So Rav Abahu translates it into the term that they used in his time. That's called bizyoni. My bizyoni. Okay, for us in Bavel, we don't know that word bizyoni. So what is it? It means something that keeps the things from flying. So what does that mean? Rashi says it means like this. You have the woman puts on a tichol or a snood or what have you. Now, she braids her hair, and then she wears a tichol or whatever over it. Now, inevitably, you have little hairs that stick out. Now, it's hard to have a tichel or whatever cover all of her head or all of her hairs. So little hairs stick out. Now, therefore, in order to cover them, what she does is she, below her kichel or below her haft or whatever, she wears a little bit. She wears a little hat or a little smaller hat or a little smaller thing around her forehead that covers those as well. So it's called talya paruchi. So now what we're saying is that. So now what we're saying is that the Braisa is saying that she's allowed to wear that in the chaser, but she's not allowed to go into Rosh Hashanah with it. So again, one reason might be because she's going to be taking, because she might, that she might take off to show her friends, because again, you know, she's going to figure, okay, it's only the little hairs that are sticking out here and there that it covers. Those, according to many poskim, she is actually allowed to have. Many poskim learn that when we say a woman has to cover her hair, doesn't mean that every single hair has to be covered. It means that the majority of them have to be covered. Not the majority, it means that basically all of them, and just, there can be a little bit sticking out near the edges. So therefore, according to that, she might take off this thing, this istima, and show it off to her friends so it looks nice. Actually, it's not so simple that they're allowed to have a little bit of hair sticking out. Kind of Tzedek, among others, talks about it and we see from this the fact that usually they would wear an istima that it is actually also. In any case, the Zohar is very big on it, that a woman has to make sure that all her hair is covered. Anyway, so all that's one explanation of the talya paruchi, that it means this thing that she would wear below the edge of her snood or hat or whatever to cover the remaining hairs that otherwise would stick out. Then you have Rabbeinu Hananel and a couple of other Rishonim have a whole different explanation of talya paruchi. It's something that she wears in order to keep flies off her face. In particular, Rabbeinu Hananel says a kala would wear such a thing. No, a regular woman wouldn't bother wearing an istima because if there's a fly on her face, she'll just brush it off or whatever. But a kala is embarrassed to do that. A kala wants to act with a certain decorum. So therefore, what she'll do is she'll wear this istima, which is, it has, similar to the sarvitin that we learned about yesterday, it's things that hang down from her hat in front of her face. Then the idea would be that it's not really considered a tachshit, and therefore she wouldn't be allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Well, she'd be allowed to wear it on Shabbos, and the Chofta was saying, but not out to Rosh Hashanah. Since we're mentioning this istima, again, according to Rashi, this thing that goes under the edge of her snud to cover her remaining hairs, and according to Rabbeinu Hananel, this thing that she has hanging in front of her face to scare away flies, and while we're mentioning this istima, there are three dinim that apply to it. Number one, there's no issur of kilayim with it. Even if it's made out of woman linen mix, she's allowed to wear it. Why is that? Rashi says because it's made out of felt. So it's not actually spun or woven together. Tosfos doesn't like that. Because the fact of the matter is that at least d'rabbanan, it should be issur if it's made out of felt. So therefore, Tosfos gives a different answer, that it's very stiff felt, and therefore, and that kind of thing, midaraisa. So you have a machloekas over here, whether midaraisa you need, shatnez is shuach tovi benuz. It has to be pressed together and spun and woven together for it to be shatnez daraisa. At least according to Rashi, Tosfos says that any one of those three is enough. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara mentions in a few places, though, that if it's made out of felt, which again, maybe in and of itself, felt is also daraisa, maybe not. But if it's very stiff felt, which doesn't warm up a person's body when he's wearing it, then you're allowed to wear that. So according to Rashi, again, what we're saying, the reason why it's mutter to wear this on Shabbos, or any time, even if it's made out of kilayim, is because it hasn't had all those three processes done to it. It was only felted together, it wasn't spun together, and it wasn't woven together. And according to Tosfos, the reason is because it's stiff, and it doesn't really warm up the body when you put it on it. I guess that would work better according to Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, that's the thing that hangs in front of her face, I guess it's a little, maybe with the one that goes around her hair, it's a little harder to understand how that would do. But I guess the idea is also it just covers the hair. It doesn't really warm her up in any way. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, the Einam Atama B'Negoyim. Number two, this Istima won't become Tomei with Tumah Paras, because again, that only applies if it was woven, if it was spun and woven. In fact, Tosfos discusses the question: would it actually become Tomei with other kinds of with other kinds of Tumas? Tosfos actually brings in that connection from the Aruch, a third explanation of Istima besides the two that we had, that it's the thing to cover her hairs and that's the thing to keep away flies. He brings from the Aruch a third possibility. It means a piece of cloth woven with gold thread where you have precious stones and pearls attached to it. So therefore, it would be attached to it relative to other Tumas. But when it comes to a Negoyim, since the cloth is not the main thing, the gold and the precious stones or whatever are not the main thing, then therefore it's not subject to Kalayim and it's not subject to Tumah of Zarah. And number three, Ve'en Yosin Bo Rosh Hashanah. Number three, a woman is not allowed to go wearing it into Rosh Hashanah because, as you said, either because she may take it off and show it off to her friends or because it's not considered attached in the first place. Mishum Reb Shimon Amru, in the name of Reb Shimon, they said another halacha that applies to this istima. There's also no issue on it of crowns or tiaras that are worn by kalas. The Mishnah tells us at the end of Soja, so those of us who are learning Soja for Sira will be getting to it right before Shavuos, that the Mishnah says over there that during the wars of Aspasianus and Pittus, which resulted in the Churban, the Chachamim made a zera that the Chassanim and Kalos are not allowed to wear certain kinds of tiaras. So when it comes to a kala, the issue was only when the tiara is made out of metal. She's allowed to wear other kinds of tiaras or other kinds of made out of fabric or whatever. So therefore, so we're saying that she's allowed to wear an istima to her wedding, just not a metal tiara or something. Okay. So all of that is assuming again that the kavla is that the kovel of our Mishnah is the kippa shel semer, is the woolen cap that she wears under her tichel. And we're saying that's what she's allowed to wear it out in the chaser, but not out into the street. And we're saying that then, and while we were at it, by the way, we defined the istima that's also mentioned in the Braisa. Okay. Shmuel, though, disagrees with what we said before. He says that the kovel is actually the badge that's worn by the Eved. So Rabbi Bohu has said that's the kippah shel semer. Shmuel disagrees. He would say, in other words, that the kippah shel semer, the woolen cap, there's no problem of wearing even in Rosh Hashanah, because again, as we said, it goes under her hat or under her tichel or whatever, and there's very little. It's very unlikely that she's going to take it off to show it off to her friends. Yeah, she could again because she could reach in. Could reach in underneath and pull it out, but it's a hassle to do that. She's probably not going to bother, says Shmuel. So therefore, it's only the Evan's badge that we're saying is also to wear out in the Shulchan Aruch. So the question is, did Shmuel really say that? Therefore, that an Evan is not allowed to go out with his badge on Shabbos. Shmuel himself said that an Eved is allowed to go out on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah wearing the badge around his neck, but not when it's attached to his clothing. Because when it's around his neck in particular, we're going to learn soon in the Gemara that there were two different materials that they would make these badges out of. Usually they would make them out of clay. And a clay one is very cheap. It doesn't cost a lot to make. And if it falls, it breaks, and that's that. The pieces of it have no particular value. So therefore, Shmuel would allow him to wear that because there's no real concern that if it breaks, he's gonna pick it up and bring it back, but not the one that's attached to his clothing, for reasons that we're gonna see soon. So our Mishnah is saying he can't wear a kovel, the pashlis, that means any kind. But here he's starting to say that there's a distinction. He's allowed to wear the kind that goes around his neck. So the answer is, like Kasha, hod to Ovid Le Ravi, hod to Ovid Eul Nafshe. there's still within the kind that are made out of clay, there's two different kinds that you could distinguish. There's the kind that he made, that his master made for him. So therefore, he's not going to try taking it off. So therefore, we don't have a concern that he's going to carry it for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. Hada Ovid, you will not say, whereas when the Mishnah says that he's also to wear it, and Shmuel is saying that means the badge of the Eved, it means the kind that he made for himself. So therefore, his master doesn't particularly care that he wears it, because after all, the master didn't even make it for him. So now we have a concern that now when he's walking in the Shasana, he may take it off. We're not even talking about that it may fall off. He may take it off in order that for at least for a while, as he's walking around, people don't know that he's an Eved. So that would be the difference. The question then is, by Kinta Lahad Shmuel. So what do you say? What are you establishing then that Shmuel is talking about when he says that When he says that it's mutter to wear, the Ovid Le'Rabbe, you're saying that in that case, it's the one that his master made for him, and you're saying therefore that he's going to be afraid to take it off. Well, then in that case, then why shouldn't he be allowed to wear the one that's attached to his clothing either? So if you're going to say, in other words, that you're talking about that he's not even allowed to wear on Shabbos the one that he made for himself, then we could say, okay, the difference is that the one that that's around his neck, he may easily take off because it's just around his neck, it's very easy to remove. Or no, the other way around, the one around his neck. We're not going to be concerned that he's deliberately going to break it off on Shabbos, let's say, because, okay, he knows maybe that you're not allowed to break it off on Shabbos. But if it's attached to his clothing, he might fold his clothing over it in such a way that the clothing is now considered carrying. But now that we're saying that even with the one that he made, that his master made for him, there's some kind that he can wear and some kind that not. Why not? And the reason is, Duma Mista, the reason is because in that case, it might break off. And he might break off his clothing. And now the slave is going to be afraid. He's going to come home and not wear it, and not be wearing it. And his master is going to think, oh, you're starting to get a little uppity over here. You're starting to take off your badge, so people don't know that you're an Eved. And that's going to cause a problem. So the Eved is going to be afraid of that. So what he's going to do is he's going to fold his talus over his clothing in such a way that the place where the stamp was supposed to be is not going to be visible. And as we're going to say in a second, now, of course, the master may be smart enough, Tosis points out, the master was probably going to be smart enough to realize that if the Eved walks in like that there's probably a reason why, and the reason is because the Chosim is missing. But at least that way, the master is going to say to himself, okay, but first, I see that the guy still has a little derecheres for me. That he's at least trying to hide that it fell off. Okay, then I can assume maybe it fell off, and now he's just afraid of my reaction, as opposed to if he comes in without anything folded up on there, and it's obviously missing, then the master is going to jump to conclusions and say that he took it off deliberately and it's going to cause a fight. So therefore, what's the problem if he folds his talus in such a way? That problem with that is, like what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef says, the Amr of Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amr of Yosef, and Hayosef the talus, the Kupelet, or Munachasai, our Sefer B'Shabbat, if a person goes out on Shabbat with his talus folded onto his shoulders. Now, we don't mean, by the way, like the way a person does when they're first putting on a talus in the morning, where they keep it, so they fold it and put it on one shoulder in order to check the tzitzit. Obviously, that's awkward. What we mean is the kind of thing where normally the talus covers the person's head, and then afterwards, and then below that, it hangs down and covers his arms and his body and whatever. So like this, if he folds it in such a way that it's only on his head and his shoulders, then chayav chafas, because that's not the normal way of wearing the talus, and therefore it would be considered carrying on Shabbos, and it would be awesome.
What's the difference? We're also carrying it on our shoulders on Shabbos, in a way, folded.
That's the key difference. The key difference is that we have it covering most of our bodies. It doesn't just hang on our head and our shoulders. It covers our entire body. Or not our entire body, whatever. It covers down to the waist, or however long a particular person's talus is. It doesn't just go onto their shoulders. So what we're saying is that to wear it in such a way where it's just on the head and shoulders would be it would be high of chassos if he does it with shogeg, and the various other penalties were made, it obviously, because that's not considered the normal way of wearing it. So now again, the problem with this eved over here is that he may do that. Normally he would wear his talus hanging down, but now that all of a sudden the seal, the badge, whatever that was attached to his clothes fell off, now he's liable to think to himself, okay, if I come home like this, then I'm going to get in trouble with my master. Therefore, he's going to try to hide it by folding the clothes in a different way, and that would be awesome. So therefore, that's the difference. In other words, so what we're saying so far, according to Shmuel, is that if he made it for himself, then he's not allowed to wear it either way, because then there's a high likelihood that he's going to take it off and just have it. But if his master made it for him and insists that he wears it, then he's allowed to if it's around his neck, but then he's not allowed to if it's attached to his clothing. So far, that's what we're saying. Okay. As in fact, we find that Shmuel, in this connection, says to the Chinin of Ashila, all of the chachamim of the household of the Reish Galusa, meaning in other words, you had in those days, you had the big yeshivas, Surah and Kumbidita, the Reish Galusa, who was the governor of the Jewish people in Babel, also had his own private yeshiva. These chachamim who learn and teach in that yeshiva, lo lipku b'sarvali chassidi, they are not allowed to go out on Shabbos with their cloaks that have the seal on them. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains the Reish Galusa in certain ways acted like a king or almost like a king. One of the things was. That people who are his subjects, for example, these chachamim who are members of his private base medrash, would wear like avodim. They would wear a certain stamp of his on their clothing, and therefore the idea is if Shmuel is telling the Chinin of Ashila, you should know they're not allowed to go out with that on Shabbos for the same reason, because if it breaks off, then they're going to be afraid of the Reish Galusa's reaction, and therefore they're going to fold their talus in such a way that in order to hide it, and again we're saying they may end up folding it in a way that would actually make them chayav chatas. And Shmuel tells them, "Lavarim not, with the exception of you, Rav Chinin of Ashila, you don't have that problem. Because the household of the Reish Galusa doesn't care about you. You're important enough that they allow you to go without that stamp on your clothing, and therefore for you there's no problem that if it falls off that you're going to refold your clothing in order to hide it." So we see from that that there's a problem with wearing a stamp or badge or whatever attached to clothing, because it may fall off. Now that's according to Rashi's explanation. A bunch of the Rishonim give an explanation that comes from the Gaonim. Rav Chai Gaon, actually, the Rashba actually quotes that Rav Chai Gaon quoted it in the name of his grandfather, who was also one of the Gaonim, that the stamp that we're talking about is like this. It's not just the chachamim who are in the Reish Galusa's private yeshiva. What it is like this. This talus, or this sarbala, as the Gemara is calling it over here, this cloak was a very important kind of piece of clothing, and you had to pay taxes on you when you wore such a piece of clothing. You had to pay a tax on it. So therefore, you'd have a stamp on the clothing. You'd have a stamp or a badge or whatever attached to the clothing to show that you paid that tax. Or the Ritva says maybe also to show that you're exempt from the tax. So now what happens if a person goes with this talus that doesn't have a stamp on it? If the tax collectors catch him, they're going to take away the clothing. So therefore, a person is afraid to wear such a thing on Shabbos. So therefore, again, it might fall off, and then he's going to try to fold it in order to hide that it's missing, and this way the tax collectors don't catch him. So that would be also, and Shmuel is telling Rav Chinina that for that reason, most people are not allowed to wear that on Shabbos, because again, they're afraid of the tax collectors, and they're gonna fold it in order to hide that's missing. But you would be allowed to, because you're an important enough person that the tax collectors are not going to bother you. Anyway, the point is, we see from that when you have a badge attached to clothing like that, then there's a problem with wearing it on Shabbos, where there's a concern that it may fall off, and he's going to end up refolding his clothing in order to hide it. getting back to what we said before, Omar Shmuel, Yotze Eved B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei, Avalai B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei, we said that Shmuel says an Eved is allowed to be wearing on Shabbos a badge that goes around his neck. Because again, we said as long as his master made it for him, then he's going to be afraid to take it off. Avalai B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei, but not the one that goes on his clothing, again, because it may fall off and he's going to try to fold his clothing to cover it. Similarly, the Raisa Yotze Eved B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei, Avalai B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei. Okay. The Raisa continues, so the Gemara says, Urminu. I have a contradiction on the other hand. So you have a Braisa that says that an Eved that makes a distinction between the one that's around his neck versus the one that's attached to his clothing. But another Braisa says, Lo Yotze Eved B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei, V'loi B'chosim M'shem Tzavarei. Another one says that an Eved is not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a badge around his neck or a badge on his clothing. And the Braisa continues, Zeh B'zeh, the Gemara is going to first finish quoting the Braisa, then we're going to get back to the question. Zeh B'zeh in Mekablin Tumah. You should know, by the way, the Braisa says neither of those kinds of badges is Mekablin Tumah, because, as now, the Gemara is going to point out later, that we're not necessarily talking about over here. Before, we were talking about badges made out of clay, which obviously those are not going to be attached to. But now we're talking about ones that are made out of metal. But nevertheless, it's not considered a kashrut for him because it's not meant to decorate him. Just the opposite, it's a degrading thing for him to show that he's an Eved. So therefore, it's not makabel tumah, says the Braisa. It's not a kashrut. And actually, says it's also not a kliy tashmish. It's also not something functional because it doesn't have any particular function other than demonstrating that he's an Eved. Also continues the Braisa, an Eved is not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a bell around his neck. But he is allowed to go out with a bell attached to his clothing, as we're going to discuss later on. And both kinds of bells, the ones that are attached to his clothing or the one that on weekdays he wears around his neck, are Mekabel Tumah, because those are considered a tachshit, those are considered an ornament, a jewelry. And the Braisa continues, an animal, on the other hand, is not allowed to go out with a badge that's wearing around its neck or a badge that's attached to its clothing. Sometimes you have clothing of animals, like we learned in the previous paragraph, for example, you have these newborn sheep that they covered them with a sheet and pinned it in place in order to keep their wool clean. So if you have a badge attached to that, it's not allowed to go out with that on Shabbos. An animal is also not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a bell around its neck or a bell attached to its clothing. And any of these kinds of bells that are used to an animal are not makabel tumah. So we said that it can't wear a bell. We said that it can't wear a bell. We learned in the previous paragraph. The reason is because you commonly put a bell on an animal when you're taking it out to the market to sell, and therefore the Chachamim don't want you to do that on Shabbos because it makes it look like you're taking it out to sell. But it's not makabel tumah because things are makabel tumah only when they're directly serving people, not when they're not, when in this case they're a decoration for an animal, which that point we'll take back up on Omer Beis. Okay. Anyway, the point is that let's focus on the fact that we had this long braisa, but it started by saying that an Eved is not allowed to wear a badge around his neck or a badge attached to his clothing. Whereas the first braisa and also Shmuel had said he can wear the one around his neck, because again, the one around his neck, he's not going to care if it falls off and breaks. He's not going to take it off because he's afraid of his master to take it off in the first place. If it falls off and breaks, he's not going to bother bringing it home because it's anyway made out of clay and it's worthless. He's not going to bring it home to show his master, look, I didn't take it off deliberately, because it doesn't really show anything. It only shows that he's an Eved when it's around his neck or attached to his clothing. So therefore, so that first bride there is saying he's allowed to wear it. Meanwhile, the second bride there is saying he's not. So how do we reconcile that? Can we say that maybe it's the same distinction that Shmuel had mentioned before, whether his master made it for him or whether he made it for himself? And in that case, we would say, so it's all talking about ones made out of clay. But again, like we said before, if his master made it for him, then he's afraid to take it off. Therefore, from the one that's around his neck, therefore he'd be allowed to wear it. Meanwhile, the one that's on his clothing, also he'd be afraid to take it off. But the problem is the other way around. If it falls off, then he's liable to try to cover it with his clothing, and he's going to be chayav katas. And then on the other hand, if he made it for himself, then he's not afraid to take it off in the first place. Is that how we have to reconcile the braises? The problem with that is that the Mishnah, in effect, told us that. Because the Mishnah already, according to Shmuel, the Mishnah that told us that you're not allowed to wear a kavul into the Shusar Abim, where Shmuel said that he is allowed to, and he said that Shmuel versus the Mishnah are talking about where he made it for himself or where his master made it for him. It would come out then that the second Braisa is telling us exactly what the Mishnah told us. Why do we need that? The answer is why? Not necessarily. You could say that Braisa is introducing another variable. Besides on his neck versus his clothing, and besides whether his master made it for him or he made it for himself, there's a third variable, both braises are talking about where the master made it for him. The canvashal maskas, the canvashal tit. But there's a difference between whether it was made out of metal or whether it was made out of cloth. And not cloth, whether it was made out of clay, rather. If it's made out of metal, so in the Mishnah we're saying that he's not allowed to wear it in Shusar Abim, where he made it for himself. But that's talking about the regular kind, which are made out of clay. So therefore, if it breaks, he's not going to bother bringing it home. So again, one that his master made for him would be allowed, because he's not going to take it off, and if it does fall off, he's not going to bring it home. But the bride over here that's saying that he can't wear any kind is talking about the kind that's made out of metal, where there, it doesn't matter whether he made it for himself or whether his master made it for him. Even if it's made out of metal, then he's liable to take the pieces home because, after all, they're worth money. Metal has a value. You can melt it down and remake it, as opposed to clay is worthless. The Chiddur of Nachman Amar Rava Bar Avua, as in fact we find that Rav Nachman Bar Avua, that Rav Nachman said in the name of Rava Bar Avua, Dogar Amakvid Olav Rabbi, something that his master minds and objects to if it would get lost because it's worth money, an eved is not allowed to go out with it on Shabbos, Dovisha Ain Makbid Olav Yotzenbay, but if a master doesn't care whether it gets lost or not, because it's anyway worthless, then he's allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. So that would be a third variable that you have to consider, whether he made it for himself or his master made it. Is he wearing it around his neck, which is allowed, or on his clothing, which is not allowed? But in addition, now we also have, if it's made out of metal, then even around his neck, he's not allowed to, because if it breaks, if it falls off and breaks, then he's going to bring the pieces home.
By that logic, a woman should not be allowed to wear a collar of pearls or diamonds or something valuable.
Well, again, we did say in the Mishnah there are a number of kinds of jewelry that she's not allowed to wear because they may fall off, and she's going to carry them. So, right. So actually, you do have that consideration. But maybe the idea is, and we said in the Mishnah, and we're going to learn in the continuation of the parak, various kinds of jewelry that women are not allowed to wear. Some of them it is, in fact, because they're very easily going to fall off. I guess, though, the idea is, again, we talked about yesterday the various apparel that exist nowadays for women to wear jewelry. Maybe the idea is a badge like this is much more likely to break off and fall off, because after all, you don't put it on, you put it on some kind of cheap rope or something. You don't put it on an expensive chain, as opposed to, let's say, a pearl necklace or something like you're describing is usually well made, and it's not necessarily going to break spontaneously in the street. In fact, it's logical to say that the second braisa, the long braisa that we quoted, is talking about stamps or badges that are made out of metal. Given that the braisa continues, that neither one is makabel truma. Now, iam is the shlemish on matkas. If you're saying that they're talking about badges made out of metal, okay, then the implication is Hani Yehud Eloi Makabal Tuma. The stamps, the badges are not Makabal Tuma, because again, as Rashi said, they're not an ornament for the Eved, because Adarabba, they're a degrading thing for him, and they're not a Kli Tash Mishita, they're not something that has a function. implying, ha-kelim yidhu makabli tumah, implying other kinds of kelim that are made out of metal or makabli tumah. So in other words, the Braisa would have to be stressing to us, you shouldn't think because these badges are made out of metal and anything made out of metal with makabel truma, therefore these are, no, these badges are an exception, the Braisa is saying. So that makes sense. Eli, I'm a special kitchen, but if you're saying that the Braisa is still talking about ones that are made out of clay, then what's the chiddush? So what would be the implication? These badges are not makabel truma, but other similar things that are made out of clay would be makabel truma. But we learn in a braisa, clay avonim, stone, kelim made out of stone, clay glolim, or kelim made out of glolim, which we learned in the first parak. Either it means Rashi over here explains, and in other places in Shas, Rashi explains that it means kelim made out of animal dung that was dried. In the first parak, when we learned this term, clay glolim, Rashi gave a different explanation that it means kelim made out of marble. Whatever, or clay adama, and kelim that are made out of unfired earth. So if you fire it, it becomes clay cheres. But as long as it's unfired, then they're not makabel truma. Ain't makabel truma loy v'divet chayr loy v'divet seifin. They're not makabel truma on a deraisa level or a derabanan level. So obviously, the braisa cannot be talking about a badge made out of clay, like we were talking about until now, because then there's no chiddush that it's not makabel truma. Nothing made out of clay is makabel truma unless it's fired. Obviously, therefore, that shows that last braisa has to be talking about metal badges. Shmamina, so good, that proves it. So far what we have is as follows. If the thing is made out of metal, then it's also to wear it no matter what, because, again, he may take the pieces home. If it's made out of clay, then you have to consider. If the Eved himself made it, he's also not allowed to wear it, because then he doesn't mind, then he may want to take it off in the street and in order not to look like an Eved. But that would be the case, according to Shmuel, again, that we're saying that the Kovel of our Mishnah, according to Shmuel, is a slave dad, then according to Shmuel, that's what the Mishnah means. He's allowed to wear it in the Chaser, but not in Rishos Rabin. And then if his master made it for him, then he's allowed to wear it if it's around his neck and it's made out of clay, but not if it's attached to his clothing, because then if it falls off, then he may refold his clothing to hide it in a way that's not going to be obvious that the band is missing. Okay. Now we're going to analyze the rest of the braisa. We quoted this long braisa because we wanted to ask from the beginning of it.
So one second. Aspired clay keli is makabel tumah or is not makabel tumah?
A fired clay keli is makabel tumah. In this particular case, the badge itself would not be makabel tumah even if it was fired, because again, it's not something that has really a function and it's not attached. So therefore, it wouldn't be makabel tumah. But the point is that when they made these badges out of clay, they wouldn't bother firing them. You fire something, you fire a clay keli. And when you want it to last long term, when you don't need it to last long term, you don't bother. So like this, whenever you need a badge, whenever you're sending your Eved on an errand, and you make a badge for him, you make a badge for him on the spot. Unless, like I'm saying, you make one out of metal, and then he wears it long term. But if it's just the average person would just make them out of clay on the spot, unfired, and just hang it around the Eved's neck or attach it to his clothing. But now let's analyze the rest of the braisa. Again, we had the braisa had mentioned, we mentioned that we quoted the braisa because we wanted to ask from the beginning of it, which said that an Eved is not allowed to wear a badge around his neck or on his clothing. And we ended up saying the braisa is talking about a metal badge. But the braisa had also mentioned other dinim. The braisa had mentioned that an Eved is not allowed to wear a bell around his neck on Shabbos, but he is allowed to wear a bell. He is allowed to wear a bell that's on his clothing. So let's talk about that. We said he's not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a bell around his neck, but he is allowed to go with a bell that's attached to his clothing. So the question is, what's the difference? Why is he not allowed to wear a bell around his neck? But Pashtus, the reason is, even though on the face of it, it's considered jewelry, so it should be allowed, but Pashtus, the reason is, again, because it may break off, the ribbon or whatever that it's attached to may break, and then because the bell costs money, it's made out of metal, therefore he's going to carry it home. in that case, groups of exclusive amulets, which don't miss the quality of it. Nudes don't have the same problem if it's attached to his clothing, that it might break off, that it might fall off, and he's going to carry it on Shabbos. The answer is, the answer is, the case of the bell that's on the clothing is not just talking about the patch, but it's just hanging from the clothing. We're talking about it's actually sewn onto the clothing. So now, if it's sewn on, there's no concern that it's going to break off. The chidur of Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua, like what Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua said that we learned yesterday, the Amr of Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua, Kolshu Orub Loi Gozruboi. Whenever you have something woven, then the Chachamim did not make a zera. So there we were mentioning it in connection with hair ties and hair ribbons and things, that if they're made out of woven material, then they're not a chafitza as far as tevila, and therefore a woman is allowed to wear them on Shabbos because no concern she's going to take them off in order to tovel. Now we're using that same expression in a different sense. Now we're using that expression in a different sense, that when something is woven, then we're not gozer, that you can't go out with it on Shabbos because then it's not going to fall off. Now, Tosfos discusses the question, what about then when it comes to the slave badge? So what about, again, you can have where it's attached to the clothing, where it's just like, it's just stuck on, but you can have also where it's sewn on. Does that mean that if the badge is sewn onto the beggar, it would be mutter? Tosfos says that no, because the difference is once you a bell is something that makes clothing look nicer, so therefore you might well put it on any kind of clothing. So therefore, Chachamim are not going to be matriach you if you sewed bells onto clothes before Shabbos. They're not going to be matriach you to tear them all off before Shabbos. As opposed to the badge of an Eved, which is not, you don't put it there to begin with for decoration, and only to begin with on clothes belonging to Avodim. So therefore, Tosfos says that would be also even if it was sewn onto the clothing. Although you have Rishonim, we'll disagree with that and say that actually all this time we were saying that an Eved can't go out with a badge would only mean when it's around his neck, a metal one or whatever, would only mean when it's around his neck or stuck onto the clothing. But they would learn that actually if it's sewn on, then it is actually mutter, not like Tosfos. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Omar Ma, we learned in the Braisa, Loi Kesa Behema, Loi L'Choysim Sheba Tavora, Loi L'Choysim Sheba Ksusa. An animal, we said, is not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a badge around its neck or a badge on its clothing. Loi B'Zub Sheba Tavora, Loi B'Zub Sheba Ksusa, or with a bell around its neck or with a bell attached to its clothing. Again, we said, because when you have a bell on it, it makes it look like you're taking it to the market to sell. Now we're going to focus on when the Braisa said, Zevazeh in Makablan Truma, neither of those bells, whether it's around the animal's neck or whether it's attached to the animal's clothing, is Makablan Truma. So let's discuss that. So the question is, Zug de Behema in Makablan Truma? Are you telling me that a bell around an animal's neck or a bell attached to an animal's clothing is not Makablan Truma? Or a minu? The Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Zug shall Behema Tmeya. An animal's bell is makabel truma, v'shaldelas tahora, but a bell attached to a door is not makabel truma, because the door itself, Rashi says, the door itself is attached to the ground, so therefore it's not makabel truma, and therefore the bell that's attached to the door is the bell that's attached to the door is bottled to the door, and therefore it's not going to be makabel truma either. So the point is, so far we see that a bell that's used for an animal is makabel truma. So what do you mean? The writer has said before that a bell around an animal's neck or attached to its clothing is not makabel truma. And the Braisa continues, Shaldelas Vasoila Behema. What if you have a bell that used to be attached to a door, and now you decided instead to use it as a bell for an animal? Tmeya, that's Makabel Tumma, because, as we just said, bells and animals are Makabel Tumma. But the other way around, Shalbehema Vasoila Delas. Now, what about the other way around? If it was originally from an animal, and you decided to use it as a doorbell, nevertheless, even though you attached it to the door and nailed it on with nails, nevertheless, it's not only the kabel tumah, but also Rashi says that the tumah that it had before So they have two things. The tumah that it had before, if it became tameh while it was on the animal, it remains tameh, and it's mekabel tumah afterwards. And the reason is, shekol ha-kelim yodin the day tumah asim machshava, because any keli is mekabel tumah based only on machshava. Once the person has machshava of something that's going to be mekabel tumah, then already it's mekabel tumah. And that includes also, so it includes in this case, for example, where he's using it for an animal bell, which again, our braita is saying that an animal bell is mekabel tumah, which is why we have to figure out how does that fit with the previous braita that said that it's not. But anyway, the point is, but you also have an example we learned in the previous perek. We learned in the previous parak that you have an example. Let's say you have something which you have a keli which is you've done a certain amount. You have a keli, a piece of leather or whatever. You could be doing more processing there, or you could decide that it's good enough as it is. I'm willing to use it as it is, and I'm ready to benefit from kabbal tumah just based on that mashallah. Then early b'day tumah and ela b'shinui ma'aser, but to take away this that should be mekabel tumah, you need shinui ma'aser. You need to do something to the actual keli itself. So even in this case, for example, putting it on the door, even nailing it up to the door, is not considered a shinui ma'aser because you haven't changed the shape of the keli. So if you were to reshape it to make it into a doorbell, then it wouldn't be mekabel tumah anymore. But as long as you haven't reshaped it, you just nailed it up there, then it would still be mekabel tumah. And also the tumah that it had before would still stay on it.
What's the relevance of talking about tumah in Ilchas Shabbos? I mean, what's the connection?
Well, first of all, I mean, we quoted a braisa, so we want to explain it. But in general, the Gemara often does that. Once it quotes a braisa, so it wants to analyze the whole thing. But especially, mostly, the Gemara does that with matters of taros because most of Seder taros has no Gemara. So therefore, with the exception of Masechta Nida, so therefore, many times when the Gemara is quoting a Mishnah or a Braisa that has to do with Seder Taras, then it digresses to explain it in detail, because otherwise we're not going to have a different Gemara to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, if in a different Masechta it quotes something in Hilchos Shabbos, it's usually not going to go into the details of analyzing it over there, because, okay, you want to know about it, look in the Masechta Shabbos. But something from Seder Taras, where you're not going to have another place to discuss it, then therefore the Gemara prefers to discuss it over here.
The fact that we don't have a Masechta on Tara is an omission? What's the reason? I mean, it's important.
Well, the reason is, Ravina and Rav Ashi apparently did not, to begin with, arrange a Gemara on Seder Taras. The pashtus, the reason is because most of the dinim of Tumah V'Tara are not applicable nowadays. We're not able to do them. We don't have Parad Yom, we don't have outside of Israel, every place is Tumah Midrashon anyway. So therefore, they didn't find it necessary to compose a Gemara directly on those Masechta. But of course, there are halachas in them that we need to understand and we need to know. So therefore, scattered throughout Shas, you have different places where we discuss things that have to do with Seder Taras and analyze them and understand what the halacha is. For the same reason, the Bavli doesn't have Seder Zroyim either, because most of Seder Zroyim is not applicable in Bavli either. So only our Seder Zroyim, the only one that has Gemara in the Bavli, is Masechta Brachos. Now, when it comes to the Yerushalmi was composed in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, those dinim in Seder Zroyim are very negaya. They still have to take Truma and Ma'aser. They still have Shriyas, et cetera. So therefore, the Yerushalmi has Gemara and all those Masechtos. But that's the general idea. Seems to be that the Chachamim composed the Chachamim, the Amoraim in Babel and Eretz Yisrael composed Gemaras on the Masechtos that have practical applicability in their time and in their place, and not the ones that don't. With the exception of Kodshim, by the way, because even though the Gemara is composed long after the Korban, but we know when it comes to Kodshim, you have the famous thing, Kola Otik Patarach Ola, Kilo Yipruv Ola, the person learns the dinim of a Korban Ola, as if they brought an Ola, and the same thing, a Chasas, and whatever, so it's still important to discuss those.
Well, there's not only Kashim, there's Zvachim also, you could say, it doesn't apply, strictly speaking, today, although some
are but Zvachim is about the dinim of Korbanos, and Kola Osi Pateras Chasas, Kilo Yisuf Chasas. Therefore, it's important to learn those. So therefore, they compose Gemara for that, on the grounds of that, because it's important to learn those halachas to instead of should be considered as if you brought a korban. Whereas Taurus is not like that. And by the way, I mean, we have to get back to the Gemara over here. We have to finish over here, but it's worth mentioning that a number of the Rishonim did the same thing. The Rif, for example, when the Rif wrote his halachas, he also only discussed the ones that are applicable nowadays. You won't find in the Rif any summary of the halachas of Korbanos or of Tumah Vatara or of most things in Zeroyim. Again, because where he lived in his time, in his place, he lived in North Africa and in Spain, those dinim are not applicable. So you have this concept that on the one hand you want people to know the halacha. On the other hand, you want to focus more on the practical halachas that people need to know rather than the ones that are more theoretical nowadays. The Rambam is almost unique in that. The Rambam is the first one really since Rabbeinu HaKadosh to write something that includes all the areas of halacha, the ones that are applicable nowadays and the ones that aren't. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. The point is, again, we have a contradiction. We have the braisa, we have the long braisa that we quoted on Omer Aleph that said that a bell that's worn around an animal's neck or that's attached to its clothing is not makabel tuma. Then we had our braisa over here that says that an animal bell is makabel tuma. And in fact, that even if you have one that was previously attached to a door and you make it for an animal, then it's makabel tuma now and vice versa. So what is it? Is it an animal bell makabel tuma or not? So the answer is, Loikasha Hodi Isle Inbo Hodilesle Inbo. The difference is, does the bell have a clapper or not? Sometimes you have bells that are made without a clapper. They're just meant to be decorative. And then you have the kind that have a clapper which are functional because they make a sound. So the question is, why is it? What's the difference? Monashach, e monahu. If you're gonna say that a bell that's around an animal's neck is considered a keli, because you're going to say it's considered an ornament, a patchit for the animal, then who cares? Apa pi the less le imbo. So even if it doesn't have a clapper, if it's still me makabel tuma, e lav monahu. And if you're going to tell me that bell is not considered a keli, because you're going to say that the patchit of an animal is not really considered a patchit, then inbo mashavi le mona. So what's the difference? Because it has a clapper, therefore it should be makabel tuma. What's the difference? The Gemara is assuming at this point that just because it makes a noise is not a reason for it to be makabel tuma. And the answer is, as a matter of fact, yes. Hey, kizit of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr Rav Yonasan. As in fact, we find that if Shmuel ben Achmeni says in the name of Rav Yonasan, the Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr Rav Yonasan, minayim l'mashmiya kol b'kli matcha shu tamei. How do we know that metal kalim that make a noise, for example, a bell, are makabel tuma? Shenema, because you have like this. After the war with Midian, in Parshas Matos, the Jewish people captured a lot of spoils, including various kalim, and the pasuk says, "Kol davar asher yaveh ba'esh," anything that normally goes into fire, in other words, anything that's used to cook food directly over the fire, for example, a spit or a grill or whatever, "Tavir ba'esh," the tahor, you have to pass it through fire, meaning you have to do libun to it, the tahor, and then it becomes tahor, and then the pasuk continues. And then the process continues. It also has to be dipped in a mikveh and has to be sprinkled with horadrim or water, whatever. The point is that the expression, the word kol davar means afilu divur. Means the word davar means meloshin divur, even a keli whose purpose is to speak, meaning to make a noise. Now, actually, the Rashba points out. I mean, it's not really. I mean, in context of the pasuk over there, and Tosfos also points out that. In context of the pasuk over there, it's talking about kashering these kalim to make them mutter to eat and drink out of, to make them mutter to cook in, etc. So therefore, it has nothing to do with bells. But nevertheless, since the pasuk also continues after meinida yischata, however, because it became tamei mes, it has to be sprinkled with haradum water. So therefore, the Gemara is applying this kol davar to that. In other words, the Gemara is taking the word kol davar a little bit out of context and applying it to the end of the pasuk. So we're saying that anything that does dibur is nevertheless yaveh ba'esh has to be kashered and has to be made that it's not tamei anymore. So we see from that, therefore, that even a bell whose purpose is to make a noise is makabel tuma. So that's the difference, in other words. And the reason for that would be, so therefore, so and the reason would be it has a function because. because when you have a, why would you have a bell around an animal's neck or attached to its clothing? The reason is so that way, when it's walking around, you're going when it's walking around, you don't know at any moment where it is, but you hear the bell, and therefore you're able to find it. So therefore, it's functional for a human being. Tosis compares it to we learned in the previous paragraph about a stick that you use to make an animal go in the direction you want, whereas Makabel Tumah, because it has a function for a person. And the person uses it in order to direct the animal where it's supposed to go. So the same thing over here, then the bell serves the person by letting him know at any time where the animal is. But again, that's only if it has a clapper. If it doesn't have a clapper, then it doesn't have that function. So therefore, that's why we'd be saying that in that case, it's not Makabel Tumah. By the way, Caden, that made noise on Makabel Tumah, I guess that probably has an interesting implication. It may mean, in other words, when Mashiach comes and we have the Dinim of Tumah and Tara again, it may mean that our watches, cell phones, other kinds of things may computers, whatever, may well be Makabel Tumah for that reason. Because after all, they make a sound, and you want them to make a sound. They have a function for that. So I don't know if that's the case, but it's an interesting possibility to think about.
Did they tell you the chatzitz chais?
The pastures, yeah. They became tamei. They'd have to tell them, yeah. And in general, almost any metal kalim on Makabel Tumah, unlike with wooden kalim and various other materials, where the wooden kalim on Makabel Tumah, only if they have a receptacle, metal kalim on Makabel Tumah pretty much regardless. And again, we're saying over here, even though it's used as an ornament for an animal, and therefore in and of itself, that wouldn't be a reason for it to be Makabel Tumah, but the fact that it also has a function for you, because you use it in order to find where the animal is, that's enough to make it be Makabel Tumah.
Okay. Even violins and violos? Violas?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. So the question is, because those are made out of wood. Again, wooden kalim are Makabel Tumah only if they have a kli kibble.
They're made out of wood, but also iron.
Well, they have metal strings, fine, but then you have to get into the question, which we discussed in the previous paragraph, what's the primary part of it? Is the primary part the wood and the metal was there in order to serve the wood, or is it the other way around? That's another matter. Let's not get into that right now. I'm not even sure what the gin would be on that. Anyway, by the way, the strings aren't always made out of metal. Sometimes they're made out of animal guts or whatever. All right. Anyway, let's go on. Because it's Bamai Ukinta. Okay. So what are you establishing? What are you telling me that the case, the Braisa on Amud Aleph, where we said that an animal bell is not Makabel Tumah, you're saying so far that that's referring to where it doesn't have a clapper. In that case, look at the middle part of the Braisa, before when we were talking about the Eved, where we said an Eved is not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a bell around his neck, but we said he is allowed to go out with a bell attached to his clothing. Again, we said the case is that the bell is sewn onto his clothing, so there's no concern of it falling off, but we said the Zev is a Kabbalah Tumah, we said that either kind of bell, whether the Eved wears it around his neck or whether he wears it attached to his clothing, either way it's Makabel Tumah. Now why? He's the less late in bowl. If we're talking about that it doesn't have a clapper, and we have to say, because if the Braisa is drawing a contrast between the Eved, between the slave's bell and the animal's bell, and the animal's bell we just established is talking about where it doesn't have a clapper, it means the Eved's bell also has to be the kind that doesn't have a clapper. And in that case, if it doesn't have a clapper, mi Makabel Tumah, would it be Makabel Tumah? How could it be Makabel Tumah if it doesn't have a clapper? Or a minu? The Gemara says I have a contradiction from yet another Braisa. Ha'oisa zagin l'machteshet, if a person puts bells onto a mortar, so you have this mortar is used to grind up spices, and as we've learned before, as we say every day in Peter Makhtotis, mitnesha kol yochal absamim, a rhythmical sound is good when you're grinding up spices. It helps them get ground better. That's why we say in Peter Makhtotis that they would be saying the whole time, hodik hated, hated hodik, in order that it should help with the grinding. So the same way you might attach bells to the grinder for the same reason. Or v'la arisa, or you attach bells to a baby's crib.
So that way, in other words, the sound of the bells helps put the baby to sleep. Or the mitzvahos tefarim, or you attach bells to covers, to cloths that you wrap around the tefarim, which the purpose of that is, Rashi says, like this. You're taking the tefarim to shul, to teach the kids. So like this, when the kids hear the bell, then they hear that the teacher is on his way, and they hurry up and get to school. All the mitzvahos tinokos, or another possibility to put bells on a baby's bib. So again, the idea is, like we said before with the animal, that this way, in case you don't know at any given moment where the baby is, you hear the bell, and therefore you know where the baby is. So in all those cases, the Braita says, yesh lehen in boltzmein, and if they have a clapper, then they're tummy, because then they have a function. If they don't have a clapper, then they're not makabel tumah, because then they're just decorative. And not so much as decorative, but because considered, it's a keli whose malacha wasn't completed. We learned before, again, that you have a keli that's incomplete, that you left incomplete, is not makabel tumah. So therefore, in this case, a bell without a clapper is considered incomplete. So they're not makabel tumah. But niklu in belay.
But you could still make them make a noise if you clap them on them.
The Gemara is going to talk about that point later. We're going to get to that later, but we'll get to that tomorrow, about that point. Right now the Gemara is assuming that the purpose of a bell is for it to clap, is for it to make a noise by itself, not by banging it on something else. And therefore, So in this case, if it doesn't have a clapper, then the Braita is saying it's not makabel tumah. The Pashtus, because it's an incomplete keli, it doesn't yet have its function of making noise. But the Braita continues, nitlu in belayhen, and if the bell previously had a clapper and then they removed it, tumos en aleihem, then the tumah still exists on them. Meaning, in other words, that if they were tummy before, they remain tummy. The fact that the clapper was taken out is not considered that now they're a broken keli where the tumah goes away. That's the point of Rashi. And then Tosfos discusses that it means that two things. It means number one, if they were tummy, then they remain tummy. And number two, they're able to be makabel tumah because they once had a clapper. And as Gemara is going to point out soon, the fact that they're missing a clapper doesn't make them that they're not makabel tumah anymore. Anyway, the point is, so we're saying that these various bells, they're not makabel tumah, we're saying, unless they have a clapper. So what's the difference? Why are we saying that in this case they're makabel tumah only if they have a clapper? Whereas the implication of the braisa on Amud Aleph is that any bell that an eved wears, even if it doesn't have a clapper, is makabel tumah. What's the difference? The answer is hani mi lebetinek. The difference is that's talking the last braisa that we're talking about over here, where it distinguishes between whether it has a clapper or not, is talking about where it's used for a baby. Or we had the various ones that we mentioned. We had a baby or the other cases that we had in the Braita, where the whole function of the bell is in order to make a noise. Because again, the purpose when you put it on a baby's bib, for example, is that when the baby is crawling around, you should know at all times where the baby is. So therefore, if it doesn't have a clapper, it doesn't have a function. Avogadol, but when it comes to a grown-up, if they have a bell on their clothing or around their neck, tachitule, then regardless whether it has a clapper or not, it's still considered a tachit, it's still considered jewelry that he wears, and therefore, afagabal, let's lay in bolt. And therefore, even if it doesn't have a clapper, it's still makabel tumah, because it's still makabel tumah, because for it to be on an adult's neck or an adult's clothes, where you don't care whether it's making a noise or not, so there the purpose of it is not to make noise, there the purpose is just for it to be an ornament, so therefore that would be makabel tumah regardless. Okay, so far, in other words, what we're saying is that if it doesn't have a clapper, then like this, if it's for an animal, then it's not makabel tumah. And if it's for a baby, it's also not makabel tumah. A baby or any of the purposes that we mentioned in the last braisa. If it has a clapper, then, whereas if it doesn't have a clapper, but if it's being worn by an adult, then it's still makabel tumah regardless, because it's tachit. If it has a clapper, then in all these cases, it's makabel truma. Because even if it's on a baby, or an animal or whatever, it has a function. You're using it because it has, as we said before, dibur. It speaks. It makes a noise, which helps you locate the animal or the baby or whatever. Okay. But then we said, we said that if the clapper was removed, then the bell is still tomei. So again, meaning in other words, that they still, if they were tomei before, they stayed tomei, and there was also makabel truma. So why is that? Well, my kazu. So the question is, once the clapper was removed, then what can you use it for? On the face of it, it should be considered a broken keli. Amar Abaya, hoyoshah hedit yochalachazirai. So Abaya says the reason is it's not considered broken if the average person could put it back in. Like this, if you have something that's broken and only a professional could put it back together, then you're right. Then the tumor would go away. But in this case, Abaya says the fact is anybody can easily put the clapper back in where it was. Therefore, it's not considered broken in the first place. Mosid Rava, however, Rava says I have a contradiction from a point that we discussed previously in our Masechta. We talked about we learned in a Mishnah when we talked about kalim that sometimes are attached together and sometimes are separated. We talked about that in the third parak and also in the fourth parak in connection with we had kalim that sometimes are attached together temporarily, like we had over their clothing that the laundrymen temporarily sewed together, or we had a scissors that sometimes are separate and sometimes are together. We also discussed it in the previous parak in connection with also we were talking about bells on animals and things. So the Mishnah says hazuvo in bochivo, that where the Mishnah says a bell and its clapper are considered connected in the sense as far as Tumah V'Tahara. If something Tomei touches the bell, then the clapper also becomes Tomei, and vice versa. If when you're sprinkling them with paradrimal water, if the paradrimal water lands on the bell, then the clapper also becomes Tomei, that also becomes Tahar, and vice versa. Now, the fact that he uses the word Chibur implies only when they're attached together, then they're considered a Kevi. So what do you mean? So once they're separated, even though it's easy for a person to put them back together, the implication is then it's not considered one keli for that purpose. The chitema, so you're going to say, says Rava, hakikamar, maybe what the Mishnah means is, maybe what the Mishnah means is that even when the bell and the clapper are not attached to each other, we treat them as though they were attached together. And we would say, therefore, that detaching them doesn't take away the tumah, which would be like what Abaya says. But you can't say that. But I'll tell you, we learn in a braisa, masporet shoprokim, a scissor is made out of pieces, where we learned before, you have a scissor where the blades come apart, the iznel shoulder hidden, or the blade of a plane, where you have a plane that's used for planing and smoothing downward, the blade is removable, and you only put the blade in when you're going to use it. Those things, when they're connected together, they're considered connected as far as tuma, meaning that if, for example, one blade of the scissors becomes tame, then the other blade also becomes tame, even though the tuma didn't touch it directly, but the in chibur l'haza, but they're not considered connected as far as sprinkling the paradrimal water. It has to be when you're sprinkling them that each one gets paradrimal water on it. There Amrinan, and we mentioned this Mishnah already, we mentioned this Braitha already, we mentioned it in the fourth parak, and we discussed the question, Monapshach, that the how, why are we being inconsistent? If they're considered connected when they're attached together, then it should be connected even as far as hazah, even as far as sprinkling the paradrimal water. So one blade gets the paradrimal water, both of them should become tahor. The ilay chibur hu afilu l'tumah nami loy. And if you're saying they're not considered connected, then they shouldn't even be. Then one shouldn't be makabel tumah if the other one shouldn't become tameh if the other one was. So why are you saying that they're considered connected? That if one of them becomes tameh, the other one automatically becomes tameh. But if you're sprinkling them, then one of them doesn't become tahor automatically with the other one. So why is that? The Amar Rabbah, and we learned over there on Daf Memches, Rabbah had said, Dvar Torah, B'shach Melacha, Chibur Ben Natuma Ben Lazar, because like this, Min HaTorah, they're considered connected when you're using them for work as far as Tumah and as far as Hazar. But when you're actually using the scissors, then if one of them touches Tumah, both of them become Tameh. And if one of them is being sprinkled with Tara Adrum water while they're attached together and then being used, then the other one becomes Tahar. And Shaloi B'Shach Malacha Ein Echid B'Loi B'Tumah B'Loi B'Azah. But when they're not actually being used, since they don't have to be connected together, then they're considered like two separate Kalim. So therefore, they're not considered connected Loi B'Tumah B'Loi B'Azah, not as far as becoming Tumah and not as far as sprinkling. But we said that's all Daraisa. But Gazru al Tumah Shaloi B'Shach Malacha Meshul Tumah Shi B'Shach Malacha. The Chachamim made a Gzera that both of them become Tumah when they're attached, even if you're not actually using them, because that might be confused with the case where you're using them. And the same thing in reverse about Hazar, they made a Gzera that at no time, if Tara Adrumah water touches one, that both of them become Tara, because you might confuse that with the case where Shaloi B'Shach Malacha, where on a Daraisa level that doesn't work. So therefore, Midrabanan, so this concept of Chibur L'Tumah and Chibur L'Hazar is Midrabanan. The point being, in other words, that we see that when they're attached, then we're talking about that if one of them becomes Tommy, the other one becomes Tommy. But if they're detached, if you have the two blades of the scissors are detached and then sitting in the drawer next to each other or whatever, then if one of them becomes Tommy, the other one doesn't automatically become Tommy. So therefore, so we see from that braisa that when we talk about the word chibur, we're talking about that the things are actually attached together. So therefore, so it should be the same thing as far as the clapper and the bell, that only when they're attached would we say that one of them becomes Tomei, then the other one becomes Tomei, and vice versa. So therefore, so what are you telling the Abaya? That once the clapper is removed, it's still Tomei, because you can easily put it back together. The same thing is true of the scissors. You can put the scissors back together easily also, and we're still saying that doesn't work. So why should it be any different with the bell? So that's Rava's question. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, with the answer of what Rava says, which is going to be your point, which is going to be the point you mentioned, Avraham Moshe, about that you're able to bang it on something. So we'll continue with that point and with other possible reasons why the bell of Makabel Tumah, even when it doesn't have its clapper.
Thank you very much. A wonderful day.
The reason being that you could still use it without the clapper, in other words.
That's going to be Rava's reason that we're going to talk about tomorrow. So far, Rava is asking a question that a bell without its clapper should be just like a pair of scissors where you took the two blades apart. So why should we say, again, we said before that if the bell and the clapper are attached, then they're considered, then if one of them becomes Tomei, the other one becomes Tomei, implying that if they're not attached, then they're not. Then each one of them is considered like a broken piece of a keli, so it's not makabel tumah. But why not? The same way as with the scissors, we're saying you can easily put them back together, and nevertheless, we're saying only when they're attached does tumah go from one to the other. You wouldn't say that if the two blades of the scissors are separated from each other, that if one of them becomes tumah, the other one, wherever it is, even if it's a mile away, it automatically going to become tumah. You don't say that. So why should it be different with the bell and the clapper?
So according to Rava, doesn't accept the argument of being attached or detached?
Well, in other words, Rava is saying just the opposite. Given that we have a Mishnah that tells us that a bell and a clapper are considered connected as far as Tumah V'Tahara, and given, on the other hand, that we have a Braisa that mentions as far as scissors, for example, that one of them is Matame, the other one, Midrabanan, only when they're attached. Because again, Midraraisa would be only when they're attached and being used, and Midrabanan even when they're attached and not being used. But we see from that if they're actually separated, even the Rabbanan are not going to make a Zera that one of them is Matame, the other. So why should it be different with a bell and a clapper that we're going to say that even once they were taken apart, once the clapper was taken out, that we're saying that it would still be considered a Kaylee? If we're saying by the scissors that it wouldn't be considered a Kaylee at that point.
Right.
Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow again with what Rava gives a different reason for it, and then we're going to discuss another point also, another reason why it would be Makabel Tumah.
Shkayach.